It's Tuesday, March 12th, 2013, and you're listening to episode 294 of Fear the Boot, a show about tabletop role-playing games and a little bit more. Running time for this episode is 1 hour and 2 minutes. Welcome to Fear the Boot. My name is Dan.
My name's Chad.
This is Wayne.
This is John.
All right, so John, you want what?
Peace, love, and understanding for all humanity.
Yeah, that's not what you just said.
My comment requires context.
Okay, give it context.
My Little Pony's awesome.
You know,
I don't care what you mother say.
That's right, Chad. I enjoyed John DeLancey as Q, as a Chaos Dragon as Q on My Little Pony.
So for Christmas this past year, we got something for my niece, Carla's brother's daughter. And even her mom, so okay, Carla's brother's wife, was like, this is the most insanely girly toy that mankind has ever produced. And at dinner, I guessed its name was 12 words long, each conceivably more girly than the last. Mm-hmm. And I was close. I looked it up on Toys R Us. It is actually 11 words long. And the name of this toy is the My Little Pony Friendship is Magic Pony Princess Wedding Castle Playset.
Yes.
I mean, this is Japanese. That is a Japanese name.
And the wedding is Candace and Shining Armor.
Right. So when I said this, no.
Which Chad proudly proclaimed in the middle of the restaurant, shutting down the discussion and so refocusing it into just awed staring.
I've seen a total of maybe 5 minutes of My Little Pony, which comes from...
You should really watch more. It's quite good.
Well, we'll get to that in a second. But that comes from kind of clips where a niece, for example, is watching it and I set it up for them or something like that on off of YouTube or wherever I got it from. And I also did, out of curiosity, watch the pre- and post-edited version of Derpy Hooves. Mm-hmm. Just because I was curious what that whole thing...
The hubbub was about.
Yeah, what that was all about.
And so not that big of a deal.
No, it really wasn't. But I found a pre- and post-edited version of that, which I watched just kind of...
Some people feel very, very strongly about Derpy Hooves.
Oh, yeah, both ways. Yeah, both ways.
I've heard a lot of people defending Derpy. I've never heard a lot of people attacking her.
I actually, while I was kind of trying to get a sense of what that was all about, what that little Tempest in a Teapot was about, did go back to some of the blogs that were on the opposing side and read what their issues and concerns were. And I'm not going to make any value judgments on, just because that's really not what Fear the Boot's about. But
what? That's not what Derpy's about.
That's not what Derpy's, yeah. Derpy didn't judge anyone. So yeah, so I mentioned this wedding castle. We're sitting there tonight at dinner, and I didn't even have the name of it yet. Like, I was still trying to feel, like, I know it's a wedding castle and its name is like 12 words long. And Chad instantly identifies that it is the wedding castle. Is it
Candace and Shining Armor? Candace was Twilight Sparkle's babysitter when she was a young colt.
Philly. No, I'm she sorry, wasn't Philly. A colt.
Colt is a male.
Yeah.
Philly.
Her horns on her head.
That's right. And between Candace and her brother, Shining Armor.
Twilight's brother.
Okay, Twilight's brother. Yeah. Okay, that just got weird. And then
I'm sorry. Yeah, I said that.
No, right. It's still weird.
For a moment we had an incestuous marriage.
Two ponies love each other.
And now we've
got, a courtship phase.
Even if one of them was a doppelganger for like 9/10 of the episode.
Yeah, yeah. That was a really cool bad guy.
At a wedding?
Yeah.
So like
bride. So spoilers, they go to Canterlot.
This hurts.
There's something going on, right? That everybody's they're all armed for war because friendship is magic. My Little Pony's not just about peace, love, and happiness.
It's actually an incredibly dangerous setting where they have people are attacking them constantly.
They have a castle that is a fortress. They have an army of armed and armored ponies for war in a kingdom with a god empress, all-powerful ruler that all of her subjects are afraid of her. Because so if you piss her off even a little bit, she puts you on the moon for 1,000 years.
Gosh.
Oh, the subtext of My Little Pony is awesome.
It's My great. Little Pony, Eisenhower was right about the military-industrial complex.
Yes.
Except Friendship is Magic markets better with little girls.
Well, because it's not about that. That's the background. It's about these ponies that are off to the side in a small town doing happy friendship things. You just see all of this other stuff.
Well, the rest of the world is on the threshold of hell.
Dragons, I mean, just all these monsters are attacking. Yeah, it's
Q.
Yes.
It's Q. It pains me that I'm going to actually watch an episode of this just because of you, John.
Q is...
It's actually two episodes if you're going to watch
it. And it's not just John DeLancey, although it is John DeLancey. It is John DeLancey as Q.
And this led to John declaring that he's looking for, what is it, a Pinkie Pie on the Street?
No.
Twilight in the Sheets?
No. Other way around. Not Twilight. Rarity.
Yeah. You're looking for, was it a rarity on the streets and a Pinkie Pie?
In polite company and Pinkie Pie behind closed doors.
Okay.
Yeah. I personally like Fluttershy myself.
Yeah. Dawn's pretty much straight Fluttershy.
Right? Yeah, I'm into the Shy Girls.
Okay. I'm with you.
Wayne, I don't know what I'd
it's
call
It's one of
Sarah.
The first times I think I've ever been left speechless on the podcast was hearing John say this. I honestly don't know what to say to that.
You don't have to say anything, Wayne. I love and accept you. Friendship is magic.
That's right.
I'm going to love and tolerate the shit out of you, Wayne.
You soulless ginger.
What's this, Wayne's this cutie mark? So an Excel spreadsheet icon?
Yes.
Nothing.
Yeah.
You have
no,
to have a soul to have one.
No, Wayne's not a cutie mark crusader. He's old enough.
That's right.
Chaz is like
I don't know what
networking.
Any of these words mean. I know they're English,
Dan, what's
but
your,
I don't
what's your cutie mark?
Dan's an
AK-47. Take your pants off. Let us see your cutie mark.
Mine's removed. I actually had a... Never mind, this is way too much information. Surgically removed, we'll leave it at that.
Mine's the Fifth Amendment.
The Fifth Amendment.
Actually, it should probably be the Sixth. That's the right to counsel.
So.
It showed up on my flank one day when I was in a history major. And then I knew I had to go to law school.
Mm-hmm. You're like, no, actually, you were like, history's awesome. I'm going to get a globe or a history book as my cutie mark. And then you're like... But historians don't make any money.
Right.
And then suddenly the Constitution appeared on your flank.
So here's. So I've got three shout outs I'm going to give. And I have to imagine that each and every one of these people was hoping, praying indeed, mm-hmm. that they would get their shout out in the context of the pseudosexualization of My Little Ponies.
Hey, man, I just like Fluttershy. I don't have sex with her.
I don't think there was any pseudo here. I think John is just sexualizing the ponies.
I was backed into this by aggressive interviewing tactics. I wouldn't apologize for my taste in women. It's very refined.
Mm-hmm.
Like Rarity.
That's
you
right.
You know, see, I did at least, Scott, I took one of those quizzes that's like, which My Little Pony are you? And I couldn't even tell you what it came up with. I don't remember. But I have not yet seen like a My Little Pony dating quiz. Like, which My Little Pony should you, is your, what is it, your OTP?
OTP is One True Pair.
Right. Yeah. I've not taken that test.
Well, so. One True Pair in fanfic sort of circles is you watch a TV show and then it has an ensemble cast. And you're like, just to make things simple, it's like, okay, there's that girl character.
Sure.
And I really think she would hook up with that other character, the B
right.
character. But she doesn't.
Tifa and Eris are...
You're OTP. Yeah, sure. Yeah. But they never hook up in the game.
Well, I meant like Cloud with Tifa versus Cloud with Eris. There's two
sure.
OTP
But
views.
You can make that happen.
Right.
Now, an OTP is like...
You can also go out with Barrett if you make both of them hate you at the maximum value.
I mean, like Kirk and Spock. Kirk and Spock, for a lot of people, very deviant, strange people... Is their OTP. And then
Oh, my.
And Sulu is like... Let me get in on that. But the OTP is your, Dan, you're big into Kirk and Spock, and you are big into Kirk and Spock being into Kirk and Spock.
Just what I thought this episode couldn't hurt more.
And you write story because you like to write, and you like Star Trek, and you like gay sex. You write fanfic about Kirk and Spock hooking up. Repeatedly, often.
All right. So since that
on the bridge,
since ponies wasn't
in
though,
the medical bay.
We've now got
in engineering.
You up to,
Scotty holds the camera.
Right. So with that,
and then
set
the Horta
up,
comes in.
Let me tell you three things you want to hear about.
Umox.
First off, I want to give a shout out to the guys over at Three Waters.
Those guys really have the lobes for business.
They have been carrying on a great Twitter conversation with Chris. Chris is the guy we sometimes lie on the show. He's not on right now because he's old and stupid and diseased and. We don't know. This is probably it for him. But nonetheless, you know, his age, anything
will
take you down.
Oh, my God. Celebrities always die in three. Hugo Chavez, Chris Hussey.
Oh, my gosh.
Who's next?
Hopefully not one of us. Good thing we're low on the celebrity list. But and also on top of that, in our not most recent episode, but the one before that, we made a mention of a Matrix RPG that doesn't actually exist because Wayne got confused by Julia's reference to the Matrix. These guys actually put out a Matrix RPG. So I will link to that in the show notes if you're interested in checking out their Matrix role-playing game. I've always thought I would play a Matrix role-playing game or video game, but only if I could play the operator.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I would want all kinds of special intervention powers and whatever that I can drop as the operator, where I get to know things and kind of coordinate things or drop situation cards or
you're
whatever.
You're not there. You're not shooting things. You're not doing all
this. But I have
this
like limited omniscience of the situation. Yeah.
But suddenly it's like you drop an Apache helicopter in the Gala Ball.
Yeah. Exactly. I've got a list of cards of skills I can load up on people and things like that and whatnot. I'd love to play it. I don't know if that's in their RPG or not, but they are really good guys. I'll put a link to that in the show notes. Go check them out. Give them your love. Secondly, obviously the most important convention this year, the best 2 days in gaming, is Fear the Con. So be sure to get out there for that. But if you're out on the East Coast, there is a convention coming up at the end of April, April 26th through 28th.
Is it BronyCon?
No.
Oh, I'm not interested.
It's in Winchester, Virginia, which is about an hour east of D.C.,
Wait, what? An hour east of D.C. would put you in the bottom of the ocean?
I know. You know, John, that's what I thought, too, but that's what they told me. So
maybe. What? No, it's an hour east of D.C. in heavy traffic.
Is it in that city of like Bioshock?
It's on a boat.
Is it in C-Lab Dome 6?
Oh, my God. That's the best con ever.
But it's
Atlantis Con.
April 26th or 28th of this year, it's called 1D4 Con. You can find it at 1d4con.com. I'll put a link to it in the show
notes.
And
at the bottom of the ocean.
As in, we rolled 1d4 to pick a cardinal direction and then walked into the ocean and died.
The only unacceptable direction was east, and that's what we picked.
I don't trust those G4s. Hey. I don't leave them on a floor.
East? We can't go east. The rules are the rules.
Yeah,
I just had a moment of sheer terror hit me as a realization hit.
Hmm.
We carpooled today.
Yeah.
Chad, John, and myself.
Mm-hmm.
They're all worked up on ponies. I'm going to hear about ponies all the way back to taking them back Chad's truck.
John,
it would be unfriendly and unloving to have a conversation that excluded
it. It obviously makes you uncomfortable. And we're your friends.
That's right.
And friendship is magic.
But I do want to see your cutie mark because I'm pretty sure it's an Excel icon.
Yes.
I don't even know what that means.
It's okay. You don't have to understand
it. You know, Wayne, you have all these questions and you know where you can get the answers?
No, I don't have questions. Netflix. I don't want to know.
Netflix, season one of My Little Pony. That first episode, I think, is a little slow, but it really picks up from there.
Dan, save this podcast.
Wait, please. You know what, Wayne? Actually, you've already... No, were you dead by that point? You may have already been party to this, because when I was writing out that XCOM saga thing... Mm-hmm. Ryan did a sock puppet demonstration to Chad about the chain of command and which My Little Pony is the best. That's
because I hacked into his email in character.
Yeah.
I hacked into his email and then he said,
I don't remember.
I probably said Fluttershy is the best pony because Fluttershy is in fact the best pony.
No.
But
Pinky's the best.
So there was sock puppet theater. And you're going to have to link to that.
I'll see if I can dig up that post. That's on our own forums. Or not forums, blah. I'll see if I can dig up that post. All right, last thing. This thing is a little bit more directly
related. This thing is a My Little Pony convention.
Well, this could be. Because one of the things that kind of got brought back to the forefront after the two-parter we did, again, on going from zero to published. I just didn't realize.
Which apparently had exactly the same title, to the character. Or did one have a colon and one had a dash or something?
I know, they were the exact same, and I had forgot we did. But anyways.
They had different episode numbers.
Well, and they did have somewhat different content, so I don't feel too bad about it. I guarantee you, anyone listening to this, you got your money's worth out of the show.
At least one person on the second set actually had gone from zero to published, so that's a thing.
But one of the things that came out of that was kind of a revival and interest in something that's been around for a while, which is the Fear the Boot Writers Guild. And what this is basically a writing group for advice, mutual support, things like that, for anyone that listens to Fear the Boot who is interested in writing. You know, they review each other's works, they kind of give critiques, people share their knowledge on stuff, you know, how to get published, how to market your work, things like that. If you're interested in doing that, I will put a link to it on the show notes. It's on our forums. Anyone is welcome to join. And they have a review coming up where they're going to kind of look at everybody's work and give critiques and whatnot on short stories, which is coming up on Saturday, March 16th. It will be done on Skype at 6 p.m. Central. And if you want details on that, either just request them on the forum or you can send a private message to Sion, spelled S-I-O-N. And you can get details, I presume it's a he, but you can get details from him as well. Either way, if you're into riding, whatnot, I've been back there talking to some of those folks since I'm getting back into riding. Great thing to check out and be a part of.
I know Chuck Wills said that it was very helpful for him when he was writing Chronicles of Spire.
Yeah.
His book on, he was the guy who was on Zero to Published.
Yeah. So it's worth checking out if you're into that. Like I said, I've been more active back there in the recent weeks. I know a lot of other people have as well. So give that a check if that's your sort of thing. All right, let's get down to a role-playing topic that doesn't involve stopping by and getting a two-man pony suit.
Head.
Damn it.
Wayne gets to be the cutie mark.
No.
All right. So which one of you wants to tell this story? I can't tell it. I can't tell it because of the fact that I have this nasty habit of when I tell a gaming story for a game that I'm running, I tend to tell it as it is, meaning like the hidden plot stuff by accident.
Oh, spoilers.
Yeah, I tend to spoil my own plot.
You're talking about a game that we had on Sunday.
Right.
And you don't want to give spoilers because all of your players are in the room.
Right. So if I actually
and we're all
say,
terrible role players who would clearly use OOC knowledge in game and disrupt your plot.
No, no.
I don't want to hear it.
Yeah.
I want to be surprised.
And I've done this before, which is why I've stopped doing it. I don't do my own game reviews in terms of like what happened last time because of the fact that I have destroyed my own plots by dropping major gives. Because I'm just going through my notes and reading what's in there.
And you're just machine gunning them off and you're like,
Oh, hell.
And like, if Chad did something like that, it wouldn't impact the game as much.
Not at all.
Dan's games are all very high intrigue.
Right.
So even if it didn't affect our role playing, it would affect my enjoyment of the game to have the big give out there. Because one of the big things I get out of a Dan game is the exploration and the solving what that intrigue is.
Okay. So which one?
Then my fellow players betray me.
Which one of you wants to give a recap of what happened on Sunday?
Do we get a chip?
You know, I do have one from Dawn, so sure.
Chet's like, I still don't want to do it.
I'm helping you out, John.
Yeah,
I'm
looking at
John. Everyone's like, this always happens to me. Okay.
But you gave me a chip out of it, so you're welcome for that.
All right. So, gaming story with John, the person who hates gaming stories the most out of anyone in the history
of the
podcast.
Good, you keep it short then.
We were conducting some negotiation with a potentially adverse force in our Epic of Rhysos game on Sunday in their base, surrounded by their security robots with nothing but small civilian-grade arms, not ready to fight.
We weren't there to fight.
No.
The whole plan was not to fight.
Dawn was playing a robot. She went in, grabbed some files, got caught, and things started to go sideways from there. Two of our players elected to either draw pistols or start slapping the opposing NPCs. Oh,
the slapping came late.
Who owned the place?
After the shooting. Which perpetrated more shooting.
Essentially escalating a conflict to a physical, more D&D apropos level than the rest of the PC group perhaps wanted. And it placed Dan in a bit of a pickle because
Dan was very shocked that neither of these two people were me.
Yeah.
I was.
Can we actually stop the game?
I stopped the game to point that out. I said, look, I want you guys to mark this on your calendar because a pair of people have gone on this wildly proactive action binge, just cowboy pushing the plot forward, and Chad is sitting there quietly.
I was guarding the door. I'm the bodyguard. That's what my guy does.
By my view of the situation as admittedly a backseat GM, trying not to backseat GM, we should have all been either dead or in the brig, or at the very least had our offending robot Dawn impounded and scrubbed or blown to bits. Dan swears that the NPCs that had us in their clutches want us alive for other reasons. I've sworn that to PCs before myself, lying when I wanted them to live. So we'll see how that comes to fruition later on in the plot. At any rate, he's got plenty of time to write it in now, whether it was there before or not.
I'll address that in a minute, but I'll let you finish the story.
And so the point of this anecdote is, ultimately, in spite of all this madness, we are allowed to leave basically unharmed and with the sensitive data that we went in there to get.
Right.
The point is, Dan had to do some serious gymnastics, not only to let us leave with our lives, but also leave with what we came in for to steal after we'd been caught, surrounded, and half the party had been incapacitated. should and how should you do that when you're a GM and the players are peeing on their own feet. You
know, and I have to say, I've seen this happen before in some previous games where we're in just a situation that seems completely hopeless. And it was different for me this time after having run more games. Like before, I was always under the mindset of, oh, wow, this is really bad. We have to somehow find some way out of this. Like in the my first Guys of Glass campaign when we were captured. But now, when I'm in this situation...
And who cowboyed up and saved you?
Chad came in and saved
us. That's right. That's right.
But now, though, when I'm with this kind of situation happens, instead I'm thinking, huh,
okay, well,
if I were in Dan's place, how would I be trying to get them out of this?
Yeah, well, okay, let's settle a little bit of compare and contrast, though. In the Skies of Glass game, you were captured by a group of rogue bandits...
A lot of them,
who are collectively known as IS, I-S-T-S, and that in Skies of Glass is slang for groups that are known as bad people. Yeah. That's where they got their name. In this situation, Epoch of Rhysos, you were in the offices of a guy that owns a tourism company.
Holy shit.
The equivalent of, like, Apple Vacations. This is who's got you.
How did we get out of that alive?
And you came in...
I'm still wondering.
Now...
Even Apple Vacations have security robots that shoot at you if you try to shoot at them.
And, John, you phrased this, I think, in a really good way when you proposed this topic. You said breaking your back or breaking the plot to get the players to win and move the game forward. I think everyone who has run a game for any noteworthy amount of time has hit a situation where at some point the PCs did something that's not just per se unexpected, but something that by all rights should land them in a whole lot of trouble. But in order to keep the game moving forward, it is most expedient for you to let them off the hook when they shouldn't be. Now, I know some game masters say, no, screw it, if they did it, TPK, they're going to jail, the robot gets impounded, that's it.
I don't say TPK, they're going to jail every time, but I do say the shadow run that you just went on was an abortion, and you don't get the goodies.
Now, and this is not, by any stretch of the imagination, the only time that I've dealt with this.
I did not have player revolt.
Did you?
Mm-hmm.
Well, then they can find their own damn GM.
They did.
Excellent.
But this is not the only time I've seen this while running a game. This just happens to be the most recent one, which got us thinking about it. Now, John, I can tell you, whether you believe it or not, that when I was putting this campaign together, after we got past the intro plot, because I was trying to feel out what the party was going to be like, once we got past that, I sat down, and as I am wont to do, I wrote my what's really going on document. And
sure,
I sketched
that one every time, too.
And I sketched out the major players, what they're after, who's hoodwinking whom, what each of them really wants and how they're going about getting, and all the kind of interrelatedness of the events of the universe. And it really is true, and I'll just put it this way, at least for the time being, because to say this in too many absolute terms would give away part of the plot, the people that you are dealing with really don't want you dead. In fact, they really do want you alive.
They want us not to walk away with their hard drives.
Right. That's the part I'm getting to.
Yeah. That's step two.
Is getting you guys out of there alive.
Not going on a slapping spree.
Getting you guys out of there alive did not require me breaking the internal consistency of the plot or the universe. They were actually working pretty hard to keep you alive for reasons that you will probably eventually find out. But the part I did have the part I did have to break on is the fact that Dawn, who's playing a nascent AI in the form of a robotic body.
You really like her character, I noticed.
I've got plans for her character.
Yeah.
I'll leave it at
that.
I like her character.
I think it's interesting, too, because the fact that, one, it's been a long time since I've done any role-playing with Dawn.
Mm-hmm.
And to watch her take that character and ask these questions of like, well, you can't even think of this in human terms because it's not like, well, what would a person like this do? Because you're not a person.
Yeah.
You're an AI. And she's even said on a couple occasions, well, I'm an AI. I look at this in terms of, I don't know, game theory, I guess, kind of sort of thing of win, loss, cost, benefit. And her character doesn't think the way a human does, but at the same time is still developing something that kind of looks like personhood and emotion and sentiment. And
she's doing a great job with it.
Yeah, she's doing a great job with it. But she hacks their systems.
As she is wont to do.
And
she was actually ordered to that time, which is pretty good for her.
Yeah.
And she got part of the way in before she got caught, but she did eventually get caught. And the part where I really had to kind of just nudge and wink was getting her out of there with those files. Because the way that I had written it was you were going to be on the station. The headquarters of this company is there. They have files that are not per se hugely deeply incriminating. It's not the nuclear football, but they do have files there that at least kind of give you guys a sense of where to go next. Because one of the problems that I've had as a game master, if I'm not careful, is there's all this great intrigue and complexity, but sometimes the players miss the little hints. And if they do it too much, they start to feel frustrated and lost because, like, we're just wandering around the dark. We don't know what's going on. So at some point, I have to give you a little bit so at least you know where to go next on the scavenger hunt. And so it's like, okay, this file's in there. And I didn't write it so specifically as to say, well, this is how they're going to get it, because I don't know what you guys are going to do. But I did kind of
go in slapping, of course.
Yeah, this is where things went awry. Was I envisioned a couple of ways. I figured, well, they could do a shadow run on the building and get it out that way. They could maybe try and do a classic Mission Impossible where they go in under false pretenses and shake hands all the while something more secretive is being done.
There was any, what we were trying to do
there
originally.
Was, yeah, it was even possible you could have negotiated with them for us information. What I did not see happening was you go in, you hack, you get the file, then you get caught, then it turns into let's start slapping and attacking people and then be all shocked when the robots fire back. I think there is a question that every game master has to answer when something like that happens of what are you willing to sacrifice for the sake of the game, and what do you see as really, even for that matter, being the sake of the game?
That's because my question. I would submit that making those sacrifices in any significant degree is, in fact, not done in the service of the game, ultimately.
Yeah, I have the fear that if this is something that's done too often, then players will basically get into the habit of we can do whatever we want, and then I know you won't kill my character, so I'm going to stand in front of this tank.
You know, I agree with both John and Wayne here to a certain extent, but as a game master too, I understand that I want to be the guy who says, oh, the plot is wide open and it's this big collaborative narrative and we're all just in this world and the world just exists as a sandbox and we're kind of putting together this story together. But the reality, the boots on the ground reality is that as a game master and players, no matter how narrative the story is, if you have a game master driving the story, there comes a point when you need the characters to do something somewhat specific to move things along. And if you're a good game master, they're not your puppets. They're not doing what you tell them.
They're my puppets.
They're your puppets, but that's your that kind of game master. So if they're going around a building and they keep walking by X, and you need them to interact with X to push the plot along, you could ask yourself as a game master, am I being really too specific or obtuse with X? Or am I doing everything that is within the realm of believability with X, and these guys just are walking past it? Maybe my players are kind of stupid, or maybe they're just not noticing it. I think that it's okay to kind of lean over to one of the players who is maybe, like, I would do this with John, because John has kind of been there with me for a long time on this, and we're really on the same page in a lot of GMing. And this is out of character.
Right.
I would say, hey, X. Right. No explanation of it. No big, deep thing. No, you got to do this and this and this and this. Just like, X. And
I think that would really kill my immersion if it were me, though.
But you have to remember a couple things about gaming. Practically, this is all practically speaking, you are not in character 100% of the time.
Right.
So if John and you and me were interacting as NPCs and we're role-playing and we're in character, to stop and say, time out, X, that would be bad. But, you know, you do this RP, you go through it, and everyone's having a good time, but the wheels are spinning, the players are starting to get frustrated, I'm starting to get frustrated, and everyone's like, okay, let's have a smoke break, then people go upstairs and whatnot. I'll lean over to John and I'll say, John, check out X.
That's right.
And he doesn't want to know anymore. I don't want him to know anymore. But the group is now pointed in a direction. Right.
And I think it's a value.
And you don't do this all the time.
Yeah, and it's a value judgment the game master has to make. I think, as I said before, some game masters would look at the game and they'd say, well, internal consistency is king. Mm-hmm. If they did something stupid and they ought to be dead or in jail or whatever, That consequence is part of the reality of their world. That's going to happen. But when I look at my games and I look at what I want out of them and what I think, generally speaking, if I look at the whole here, the group wants out of them, it's a compelling story that's moving forward where there's mystery, but the mystery is approachable.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I was concerned that if I had this game end with people dead or arrested or even worse, walking out of there just as blind as when they walked in, that the game would start to kind of lose any sense of forward momentum. People would start to feel like, well, we really don't know what we're doing or why we're doing this. We know there's all this stuff going on, but we don't even know where to look next. We'll just kind of wander to the next geographical plot point and see what occurs there. And the whole thing starts to feel very disjointed.
Yeah. And we've seen that in games, and it gets rough.
Well, on your point, okay, so you go into this building, and the players have a plan, and they have some goals, and if they go into the building and fail, that's one thing. They said, at least we can try, at least we failed, and that was something. It advanced our characters, it advanced the story a little bit. If you go into the building and nothing happens, or at least it seems like nothing happened because there's sort of this behind-the-veil failure.
Right.
And then the players walk out, they're going, you know, as people, not as our characters, we just spent 2.5 hours in a building and nothing happened. Imagine watching a movie.
Yeah, nothing happened is terrible, but nothing happened isn't the only option.
Right.
We could have ended that session in their corporate brig, and that would have moved the plot forward quite briskly.
But that would have been going in there and failing.
Sure would have.
And failing would have been awesome. I love failing.
Well, couldn't have failed any harder.
I love it.
Let me admit something here that I, as a GM, I didn't quite do right. Once again, I had figured, okay, they need to find a file. It's in here. I wrote out some notes on this is kind of the gist of what the building's like. How they go about getting it, I'm going to roll with and should generally be okay. And you guys chose an approach of we're going to take a pretty forward approach. We're going to walk in. We're going to talk to them. Meanwhile, the AI is going to try and hack their systems from inside the network and get some kind of information that might be useful to us. Totally workable. Partway through, the AI gets caught.
Mm-hmm.
But by
which
this
is awesome.
Totally fine as well. Mm-hmm. So I'm like, okay, I can still work with this. We'll just change the setup. So at that point, they kind of tried to have a moment of real time with you. We caught you doing this. Let's stop BSing each other. What are you really after? You show me yours and I'll show you mine sort of moment. Mm-hmm. It was at that point, then it escalated beyond that into rather than accepting we got caught and trying to sort of fail forward, instead, it became conflict. Mm-hmm. And now it's like, shots are being fired. And then I even de-escalate from that back to, okay, we're all talking. It's tense. I slap her. God damn it. And it's like, and I'm not sitting here trying to bag on the actions of any player or character. My point being that as a game master, I'm going to admit, to draw from another game, I got caught flat-footed. I was prepared for conflict scenarios. I was prepared for non-conflict scenarios. But this weird mix of how it went down, mm-hmm. of we're trying a sneak approach, we get caught, then there's conflict, the conflict de-escalates, we're having this moment of, okay, let's get real with each other, and there's 100 ways that could have worked out, you guys reaching detente, or even if not reaching detente, at least kind of saying, you know, maybe even forming an alliance. I mean, heck, I don't know what would have happened.
No, I prompted you half a dozen times for the alliance speech,
and then it's like, now this has occurred. And if I look at the universe with real internal consistency, an AI is not supposed to exist. They are all but illegal, and depending on where you are at, they might be illegal. Dawn is going to get confiscated and probably destroyed. Pat and Beth are probably going to jail.
Mm-hmm.
And the rest of you are probably going to be so heavily investigated that, you know, is there a way to work that out to where it's like, okay, you guys pay a penalty. You get confronted. You get thrown in prison and then from there have to do some political stuff to work your way out of it. Probably so. I will simply admit that as a game master, I was so caught off guard by these, what to me, and I'm not picking on the players here, but what to me felt like very almost random escalations,
mm-hmm.
that I was at the point like, oh my gosh, I've got two options here. Either I bend credulity to let them go with the MacGuffin so the plot moves forward, or I stop them in their tracks. I keep the universe consistent. But what I'm sacrificing for that consistency is the enjoyment, buy-in, and possibly the future of the campaign for several players.
Okay, you hit
what you see.
And I was willing to kill consistency on that altar.
You hit on something big there, and I feel for you in that situation. Because you're at that position where you've got, you know your group of players. You know all of us. You know what we want to get out of the game and such. And you have to make that decision right then and there. If I make the wrong move right now, this could kill the campaign.
Yes.
Because we are a group of players where if certain things happen, it will kill the game for individuals within the group. Some people are more willing to go along with some things than others. And you are kind of in a bad place where you have to make that choice of what am I going to do right now? Because a wrong move isn't just a bad session. It could kill this campaign as it's just getting started.
And that is the other side of that coin. If you would have gone that second harder route, not necessarily killing every PC that stepped out of line, but making life more difficult for us because of what happened, I would have been more invested. Instead, having seen you back off from the consequences of the in-character actions, I'm now less invested.
Well, and that
plus, I don't leave the table.
Right. And that's the thing is, one, I realize with you, you want some hard knocks.
Yeah.
You want a fair game, but you want some hard knocks. There are people in the group, and you know, I even, at least to some extent, put myself among them where there are times where I'd rather not have the hard knocks.
Well, I don't want an endless parade of plague rats biting off my face, but...
Well, not in this
if
game.
If something goes as bad as that went, I expect for there to be something more harsh result than you walk away with what you came
well, from. And that, I will tell you right now, that is something that I have redoubled myself on, is that in the coming games, I need to make it clear this is a universe with consequences. And I don't mean that I'm going to go out of my way to set up
right. I don't mean that
gratuitous or these capricious sort of circumstances where I'm just going to blow up your ship just to prove I can. But what I
don't think you did that in this situation. I think what happened is that you had everybody went in to talk, and that was the plan that was laid on the table. And nobody had talked about pulling guns and going crazy. And then the plan was working as intended, and then there was a failure. And the response to the failure was not try to be clever and use our brains. The response was pull guns and roll dice. Sometimes pull guns and roll dice is the proper response. It's really the better response when the entire team is on board with it. And here's where it really breaks down. 25% of the team was filling their hands with guns and slapping people and going crazy. And they were doing the thing that all PCs do at certain points of games and all games across the country. They use all these combat stats that they have built around their character and built up into the character. And that's what they're there for. The other 75% of the team was in talk mode, which is fine. Again, not your fault, not anybody's fault. It's not a fault thing. We were in talk mode. And the fighting went really quick. And it was kind of my impression, my sort of mental impression was like, bam, 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 down. And then the three people who were negotiating and talking were standing there, guns pointed at them, their guns put away. The people who are all the combat people were on the ground, and we're looking at each other going, whoa, whoa, that escalated quick.
I was, and Chad, you and I have both been the action guy in the past that's caused things like this to happen.
But I take responsibility for my actions. If I do something where I'm put down like that, I'm not saying rescue me, and not that anybody else did this either, but I'm not saying you guys got to get into a fight, or you got to rescue me, or it's the Game Master's fault for putting me down. I know I went cowboy. I know I go cowboy all the time, and I get put down. And I enjoy that. That's right. What I like about the game.
Well,
because sometimes when I go cowboy, it works. Yippee-ki-yay, motherfucker.
I really think, moving forward,
mm-hmm.
I've got to reestablish a sense of a universe with consistency and consequence. And I think future games will allow me to do that pretty well because of where the plot is headed from here. And I also think that one of the things that I'm going to have to adjust to is maybe when I write my game note, I don't script my games. You know, I've put out my game notes in the past for people to look at. So, I mean, anyone who's read them that's listening to the show knows what I'm talking about. I don't script most of the session. I might script the start of it just to get me going. I just kind of more lay out these concepts. But maybe one of the things I need to start thinking about is not, okay, here's a couple different ways in to kind of template out the different approaches to it. Conflict-oriented, non-conflict-oriented, sneak, the diversion, whatever. But maybe I also need to start laying out, if this goes wrong, here are some things that could happen that more plausibly move the plot forward. I keep what I need, because I needed you guys to get that file. I needed that to happen. But I could write some kind of way of saying, okay, if this goes wrong, maybe what should have happened is this guy, the CEO of the company, calls the cops. You guys get arrested. The robot gets impounded. There's a bunch of political maneuvering. Maybe you guys have to do a little bit of work. And eventually the organizations that you guys are attached to pulls enough strings to get you released. But there's
was actually one of my contingency plans. When things went up in the air, I was like seconds away from calling the cops on us. Like, not this guy saying, yes, Mr. Officer, we did it. Please put us in a jail and give us a lawyer.
Yeah,
so, because we would have been bailed out, jumped ship, and gone away.
My contingency plans were all working around something we didn't even have to deal with. And that's, okay, now that we've got Dawn's character out with the file, they're not going to let us leave with those files. How are we going to convince them that the wiped robot that we hand back really was her when it's not?
My contingency plan was to try to join them, because that was something I went in with an open mind toward doing the entire time. More gaming story. Our campaign is set on the frontier of a border zone of a human-alien war from several years ago that the aliens won. Not totally, but the conditional peace gave them planets and people. And it appears at this point in the plot that the people that we were trying to steal from are perhaps extremist, aggressive agitators, saboteurs, subversives, whatever you want to call them, pursuing a means to rescue the human worlds that are behind the line, or at least the people on the human world. And while the government unit that we're all in together is more inclined to hush those things away to keep a sustained peace and prevent Galaxy War 2 from breaking out, there are individual people on the human side of the line who say, hell no to that. A peace treaty that leaves millions of our own living in North Korean prison camp conditions under alien control is no peace treaty at all. We need to start the fight again.
And my character sees things a little differently in that his big focus is the other war that's going on up north with the Asta. I guess it's not really north because it's space. But,
Galactic
Galactic North, we'll call it that. But his concern is up there. He cares more about, you know, getting up there and dealing with that situation. But both our characters have done undercover work before. So my character was more than willing to sign up to get the information and then turn back to the organization. Yeah. Where you were actually willing to sign up to sign up. I was willing to sign up to go undercover.
And that sort of became
get the information.
My point is, I too was turning the wheels rapidly, IC and OOC, for what am I going to do when we're all in a prison cell? And my answer was to join
them. And obviously,
if I deconstruct my thought process, what really occurred for me as a game master is, so to speak, out of character moment. Because I think a game master, just like a player, can be in character without a character. Except the game master, your character is the character of the setting and the universe that this is occurring within. And the thought process I made is, I'm thinking back on my past gaming experiences where I've been accused of the plots are too obscure, too hard to see. It's not real clear what the way forward is. And I was so gun shy, if not flutter shy, about trying.
You're always flutter shy.
About trying to not let that happen, that I did some out of character things to keep it from happening. Now, I'm curious, though, because I know this happens to every game master at some point where the party has done something and you kind of back off from making them pay their full consequences. John, you said you had a confession of this from the Goblins campaign.
That's right. I did it in the original Blood Moon Goblins
I want to hear this, and I will tell you in all honesty whether I noticed it or not, because I'll need my memory jogged.
Don't know if you were there for that. This may have been after you were dead.
Okay.
But tell me if you were or weren't.
All right.
Zerut had seized the crown out in the field from
Gaz?
No, Gaz was already dead at that point, and he had been dead for some time.
Okay, this is definitely after you, because Gaz was still alive.
Okay,
when
the They managed to get Gaz killed by Ugnak and Greshlug, setting him up as if he were betraying them, when in fact he was not. Leadership then immediately passed to Zarfu, who, while they were away pursuing something else, basically convinced the entire rest of the tribe that the Temple faction were out to get them or collaborating with humans or something. The realm divide happened. If it was Rome total war, the Senate declared the Temple faction outlaw. It was no holds barred. They had to either conquer the whole tribe or wind up in the feeding pit. And what was left of the Ruck, which was most of it still at that point.
For not following this, the way that John's goblin thing is set up, there are three basic axes of power within this goblin tribe. There's the trap makers, the temple, and then the Ruck, which are kind of like the military faction.
Basically, it's the Ruck is the army, the temple is the clerical faction, and the trap makers are the out-of-control intelligence agency, who are really their own political power.
Right, and so what happens is the rightful king, who has these two, this is goblins, there's two orcs that are kind of in there to puppet him on behalf of an orc tribe. They set up this goblin king to appear to be betraying the orcs, so the two orcs kill him.
Yes.
Which leads to Zarfu, who's what, the head of the trap makers?
The second of the Ruck behind
Gaz. Oh, second of the Ruck.
So the Ruck retained control. So the military, there was no revolution, was an assassination.
So the military retains control and declares that the temple caste, or the temple faction, or whatever you want to call them, is a subversive.
Yeah.
And so realm divide occurs, and continues
and
from there.
When the Ruck goes out to hunt them, not balancing the encounter, not using Pathfinder encounter levels and challenge ratings, anything like that, just throwing the Ruck at the PCs, they were significantly outmatched. And I wanted the fight to be hard, but I didn't want it to be impossible. So I made them make a tactical choice that was very poor for goblins and for how they operated, but which allowed my PCs to get the better of them, which was I changed their chain shirts to full chainmail and deprived them of two squares of movement around, and basically
so they couldn't swarm.
Yeah, basically allowed the PCs to move at 150% of the speed of the NPCs in exchange for only a couple of AC points that the NPCs got. And I'm pretty convinced that if I had not slowed them down in that fashion, they would have been chopped to bits, and that would have been the end of the campaign. It's not exactly Deus Ex Machina, but I will go on the record as admitting, as hard as I've been on Dan, that I have taken a bit of weight off of the opposing end of the scale when I thought it was going to be too heavy.
Actually, you added weight onto it.
Huh?
You up their armor to slow them down.
Well, true. Okay.
Never mind. Okay. That was funny in my head.
I'm sure.
Chad, what about you? You've got to have a story like this somewhere.
Oh, where I've
let somebody off easier than you should have for this.
Well, yeah, I killed. You remember that Skies of Glass game that I ran many, many moons ago before these two?
Yes.
Where I told the group that this was going to be a pretty brutal game.
Yeah.
But it's going to be an even game. And they were asking me, Skies of Glass, post-apocalyptic, yada, 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 semi-future, not really far future. They asked me, can they have, like, machine guns and rocket launchers? Or, you know, what's the tech level, so to speak, here? Are they going, are we going to be tooling around in tanks? Or do we have, you know, homemade bows and arrows on dead horses? And I was like, you can have anything you want, but anything you have, the bad guys will have. So, you know, if you guys want machine guns and stuff, but don't want to go up against machine guns, then don't take machine guns. And so you guys can set the level of opposition, as it were. There were a couple of characters, one in particular, I'll let you guess who took a lot of grenades, explosives.
Did it rhyme with Bill?
No.
It wasn't?
No, this was before him.
Whoa.
Yeah, this is days
this
ancient.
This is proto Bill.
This is like maybe
Bim.
I know who Bim is. Bim. A feminine hygiene product. That Bim. That's right. It's episode 2 and I'm still not over it. You ruined my joke.
Oh, Bim.
You know, this podcast is a waste of time. Nobody will listen to it.
So we have Bim, and Bim took a whole bunch of pipe bombs. They opted for the lower tech. They wanted horses. I think they had, like, shotguns, muskets. I mean, nothing too heavy duty. I ain't even when I get shot with this stuff, but it's no, you know, laser weapon or particle beam or something like that. And but Bim stocked up on a ton of pipe bombs. I mean, we're talking plastique and a metal pipe and nails shoved in it and the whole horribleness of a pipe bomb. And they went up against a bunch of guys, and I threw a grenade at them. And I was counting out the numbers, and it killed them. It didn't kill Bim. I mean, it killed him.
It never kills Bim. It kills his friend.
It killed everybody. The whole party. Everybody did. I mean, we're talking like, okay, guys, the bad guys are, oh, this is going to be a cool, good fight. Yeah, the bad guys are coming after us. Okay, roll initiative. Okay, they get to go first. No problem. Pop, toss, boom. How many hit points you got?
What happened and was then, what you would expect if you have a group of people standing within a couple yards of each other and somebody tosses a pineapple into the middle of them. I mean, it's what you would expect to occur.
Every single one, first game, first combat.
Oh, it's
first
easy.
First turn.
They're not even attached.
Yeah, exactly. So
life is cheap in Skies and Glass.
I literally, you want to talk about immersion breaking. It is rewinding time.
Yeah.
That grenade. So that's how you handle it?
Yeah.
It was magic
grenade,
rewind.
You know, the explode, the blood and guts all go back into people's
weak
bodies, and the grenade explosion goes back in the grenade.
That's
the grenade,
what you get, Bim. Live by the sword, die by the sword.
Here is the bitch about a role-playing game. And I think you can think of it like a movie versus a television show. When you set out to do a movie, you've got 90 minutes, 2 hours, 2.5 hours, whatever to fill. And when that movie is over, presuming you're not setting up a series, it is over. The characters can be as wrecked as you want them to be, okay?
Let's take this approach in con games.
Yeah, I do too. Yeah.
I take this
too.
Approach in my regular games.
And many of my con games
you
have ended.
Haven't met Bim yet.
Bim would not last.
Many of my con games have ended with the party heavily fragmented or many people dead. It doesn't matter because
con games are no holds barred.
The credits roll and it's over. But you have to think, at least, or I think, of a regular campaign as being more like a TV show where I want this to go on for a certain amount of time. Now, Chad, like you, I do want a beginning, middle, and end, though probably my ends are more ambitious, not in terms of meaning they're better stories, but I mean, it's just farther out.
Right.
I plan you for the longer long campaigns. Yeah. But there is still, nonetheless, a beginning, a middle, and an end that is intended for that particular plot line. And one of the things that I want to do is to tell this story. If I have a TV series that I intend to run for 3 seasons, and on episode 4 of season 1, the whole cast dies.
Oh, you watch Game of Thrones.
Or let's look at a TV show that I think fell apart on this. Blake 7.
Oh, yeah.
End of season 1, or start of season 2, wherever it fell.
Yeah, everybody's dead.
They killed everybody. And started with a different group of characters, and a show that was really kind of questionable to begin with, went completely into the toilet.
Yeah.
And, you know, they kind of destroyed their own show. With a television series, it's fairly typical that they get into trouble, and by the end of the episode, you've gotten things generally back on track.
But what about our wacky adventures?
But, well, that's the thing, though, is with a television show, even if you have an ongoing drama like Game of Thrones or Sons of Anarchy or whatever, you can let things go a bit off the rails because of the fact that it is always doing so in a controlled way. No matter how random it looks, the writer has a sense of where this is headed. And so the writer can say, well, a grenade got thrown into the middle of the party, but this is going to go down a certain way. And in a role-playing game, because you introduce players who do things you can't and should not script, and dice, which don't always cooperate with the best interest of that storyline, as a game master, you will eventually be faced with one of two options. I can either kill everybody off and end the TV series, or I can choose to do something that seems a little bit quirky and risk having the series jump the shark, but at least it's still there and moving forward. And I know the best answer here is, well, find some way to keep it together that doesn't break immersion. That sounds great on paper, and by God, do it. But in reality, you won't do it 100% of the time. Mm-hmm. They will catch you with your pants down at some point, and you are going to, in the panic of the moment, make a poor call. But I think the one thing that I would go back to is, look, I consider it successful, and here's why. And I don't think this is just putting lipstick on a pig. I consider successful.
Who would do that?
A brony.
Oh, wait, Pat.
I look at it this way. I mean, I think it's successful for one reason. That game occurred on Sunday. As of this recording, it is 48 hours later, and we are still talking about it. That means it at least was compelling, okay? I'm not saying it was great. I'm not saying it was perfect. But the interest is still there to come back on Sunday and try again, in the same way that I guarantee anyone who's watched a television series has probably had that one episode they couldn't stand. But you're so invested in it that if...
The one where Applejack meets the Buffalo Herd.
But you're so invested in it that if the writers recover from that, you can kind of forgive it, forget it, and move forward. I just watched Avengers for like the second or third time last night. And like a lot of people, that line where Bruce Banner says, "The secret is I'm always angry." It's kind of like a what?
Yeah, where did that come from?
Where did that come from? And how is it? It makes no sense in terms of...
Do you know what happens when you strike someone with the electricity?
When a frog gets struck by lightning. Yeah.
Worst line in any movie ever.
But because of the fact that with Avengers, the rest of the movie is so good, even though that one line doesn't make a whole lot of sense in terms of Bruce Banner's character and how the Incredible Hulk works and all that kind of stuff, I can kind of shrug it off and keep going with the rest of the movie. And I think the same thing is true in a game, that if you as a game master stumble, I don't think it's a crisis, because you can go back and try and get everyone reinvested and just be a little more careful in the future to say, okay, we've got to reestablish some consistency, some sense of consequence. And I grew from that. As a game master, I have learned a technique I'm going to need to do, which is start writing out more plausible ways of, if it goes wrong, here's how I can let it go wrong and let a consequence occur without ending the series.
Which is to say, plan for your player characters to kill all the shopkeepers, which I had to do when I was 12.
Yeah.
You know, if you've never stumbled or never had, you know, that moment that you think back and you think, if I'd have only done this, if you've never had that moment as a GM, you just haven't read any games yet.
Yeah.
It will happen.
And honestly, Dan, I don't think you need to write out all the contingency plans. I think that you just need to take a more improvisational approach to it. It might wreck the game, so to speak, in the short term, but then you have a week to recover. You're like, okay, that kind of screwed up where I was going with the plot, but how can I bring success out of failure? Instead of just, you know, it's like, okay, because let me tell you, you can have 100 contingencies. You're never going
to
play.
Well, right. And I don't intend to. Mm. More what I was saying is just having a few ideas
right. That
maybe I can draw from and say, okay, this ain't what I expected, but I've got an idea here that maybe I can rework. I see light somewhere out there. I don't know necessarily how it's going to take shape, but here's at least some kind of a lifeline that I can pull on.
Creating escape hatches.
Yeah. And I think one of the struggles that I am afraid of is that within any group of people, people respond to the games in different ways. They want different things out of it, and they respond to events in different ways. And I have to be careful, because I know that if I create too much of, or certain types of, consequence, that there are some people where that is going to distress them toward the game. Mm-hmm. They're going to be less interested in it. They are going to possibly check out completely. And that's something that I have to balance, is at the end of the day, my number one goal is not to run a perfectly plausible, internally consistent story. My number one goal is to create a game that a group of friends can have fun with. Now, I realize that that may require a certain degree of internal consistency, because if the game is completely random, then it's not fun anymore. But
you also have to really know your players, too, because you don't necessarily need to think about this as tailoring that advice to the group as a amorphous whole, but you can tailor to the person. In this situation that we talked about, where, you know, it's like we get in the file and we get caught with our pants down and guns start shooting and stuff, there's a couple of players who they don't like failure. They want to succeed in this group. And failure sucks the fun out of the game for them, because they don't see success in failure. They don't see the positive effects of failure in a narrative. And that's fine. And then there's other people, like John and myself, who really enjoy failure because we see failure as opportunity.
I don't enjoy failure. No. I enjoy legitimate challenge.
I
enjoy winning because I won, not because the GM won't let me lose.
And I enjoy failure because I see it as opportunity. Because it's a narrative, and when you fail, that doesn't necessarily mean I'm going to have a bigger victory. It's part of the story. sometimes you right. don't win.
And I kind of split the difference in that I enjoy...
Well, and I do like big wins, too.
Yeah, so. I enjoy the big wins. I enjoy seeing the characters have setbacks and have failures. The real difference is too many failures will make the player feel like they're failing. Mm-hmm. And that's what I don't enjoy. I don't enjoy feeling like a failure as a player, but having my character go through failures
but
and
how
struggles.
Much of well, that is incumbent me, on the GM and how much of that
hold
is
off,
incumbent
Chad,
on
let,
the
most of it's incumbent
let
on the
me
player.
Use one of my old chestnuts here. Hold that thought. Because I think failure is a topic that we can come back to really full bore next episode to talk about the role, both in terms of what it can and can't do or should and shouldn't do, a failure, and how that impacts the players and all that kind of stuff. I think that's a great topic to unpack, and I think it is great enough that it deserves more attention than we can give it here at the tail end of this show. So to wrap this one up...
That was smooth. It's like we almost didn't plan that.
Yeah, it was.
Oh, I said that out loud.
Said the loud part quiet and the quiet part loud.
I just want to say it's a good thing I don't absolutely hate failure considering how I roll. Everyone knows how I roll dice.
You have to like failure with how you roll dice.
You at least have to be used to it.
Yeah.
So
expect it. Embrace it. Cry in a corner with it.
So anyway, check the show notes. Bunch of links to a couple different things.
Poor Wayne. I want to give him a hug.
It's like Wayne.
I'm just going to stop here. So thank you guys for tuning in. Have a great week. Check the show notes, all that crap, and we will catch you next time.
Fluttershy is the best pony.
No, it's Pinkie Pie.
I'd so do Applejack.
This has been a production of Fear the Boot, copyright 2013. Listeners are free to use this show in any non-commercial endeavor as long as credit is provided to feartheboot.com. You can find previous episodes and other resources at feartheboot.com. Fear the Boot is also a member of the Pulp Gamer Media Network of shows. You can find other great shows in this network at pulpgamer.com.